A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
An old man sits on a wooden bench in a Portuguese village square at 10 in the morning. The bench is worn smooth in exactly two spots, where he sits and where his friend sits. A single car passes. He watches it. No phone in his hand. No reason to be there except that this is where he is every morning. Now picture yourself right now. Calendar ping, Slack notification, three meetings stacked back to back, and a vague sense that you're optimizing everything except the thing that actually matters. What does that bench sitter know that we don't? And what would it take to build that kind of companionship into a life that currently runs on optimization?
That scene, the bench, the traffic, the quiet, it is not a vacation postcard. It is a daily practice. And it has a name in some places, though not in English. So Daniel sent us this prompt about the Mediterranean bench-sitting tradition and its Israeli cousin, the Parliament. These are groups of mostly older folks, often retirees, who meet up with no fixed schedule, no agenda, no cost. They just show up. In Israel, the Parliament is usually at a coffee shop. A group exchanging political hot takes over tiny cups of Turkish coffee. In Portugal or Spain, it might just be a bench and a view of the road. The question is what we can learn from this, whether any culture has actually named it, and how it connects to the Blue Zone's longevity research. And the practical question underneath all of it, how do we bring more bench sitting into our own lives?
There is a lot to unpack here, and I want to start with what is most counterintuitive about this whole arrangement. We live in an era where coordinating a simple coffee with a friend involves a doodle poll, a group chat, a calendar invite, a confirmation, possibly a reschedule, and then a cancellation the morning of. These men just... The absence of coordination is the feature, not the bug.
That is exactly the thing that jumps out. And I think it is worth naming the paradox right up front. This looks like doing nothing. It looks like the least productive possible use of time. But it produces something deeply valuable. Companionship, belonging, a sense of being seen without having to perform. These are things that people spend enormous amounts of money and effort trying to get through structured activities, and these guys are getting it for free on a bench.
The bench is basically the glockenspiel of social infrastructure. Nobody asked for it, nobody notices it, but it is holding the whole composition together.
That is a perfect way to put it. And what is striking is how this pattern appears across Mediterranean cultures, but feels completely alien to modern professional life. You see it in Italy, Greece, Spain, Portugal, Israel, Turkey, North Africa. There is something about the Mediterranean basin that produces this, but it is not just climate. There are warm places without this tradition, and there are cold places with versions of it. So what is actually happening on that bench? Let us start with the anthropology. Do other cultures have a word for this?
That is the first thing I wondered. We have words for so many specific social rituals. The Italian passeggiata, the evening stroll where everyone dresses up and walks the main street. The Greek volta, an aimless walk, more about the walking itself than the destination. The Spanish sobremesa, lingering at the table after a meal, sometimes for hours. But bench sitting specifically, it is remarkably unnamed.
That absence of a name is itself telling. The reason it does not have a specific label is that it is so embedded in daily life that nobody thinks to name it. It would be like having a word for breathing while you eat. It is just what you do. The Israeli parliament is one of the few examples where it actually gets a name, and even that is a joke. It is a bunch of retirees arguing about politics, so they call it the parliament. But the ritual itself, the showing up without coordination, does not have a formal designation.
Which is strange when you think about it. We have a word for schadenfreude. We have a word for déjà vu. But we do not have a word for the thing that might actually keep you alive into your 90s.
Let us talk about the coordination mechanism, because this is where it gets technically interesting. Why does no coordination work? The answer, I think, is in Robin Dunbar's research on social groups. Dunbar is the anthropologist who proposed Dunbar's number, the idea that humans can maintain about 150 stable social relationships. But the part of his work that is relevant here is what he calls grooming talk. In primate groups, social bonds are maintained through physical grooming. Humans replace that with language, specifically gossip and small talk. These low-stakes conversations are not trivial. They are the maintenance mechanism for social cohesion.
The bench is basically a grooming station.
And here is why the no coordination part is so important. In a primate troop, nobody sends a calendar invite for grooming. It happens when two individuals are in proximity and have a moment. The bench works the same way. The cost of showing up and finding no one there is zero. You just sit alone for a bit. Maybe someone shows up, maybe they do not. Either outcome is fine. That low downside is what makes the system sustainable. If every social interaction requires a confirmed RSVP and a $45 brunch, you are going to have fewer social interactions.
The overhead exceeds the benefit. I have absolutely had weeks where I realized I spent more time scheduling a friendship than actually experiencing it. And the scheduling itself becomes a kind of performance. You are not just agreeing to meet. You are agreeing to be entertaining, to have news, to justify the slot you have been allocated in someone's Google Calendar.
Which brings us to the economics of companionship. There is a concept from sociology called the third place. Ray Oldenburg coined it in 1989. The first place is home, the second place is work, and the third place is somewhere you regularly go to be around other people. A cafe, a barbershop, a pub, a library. The problem with most third places is that they require consumption. You have to buy a coffee, a beer, a haircut. The bench is a fourth place. Zero marginal cost. You just sit.
In an era of what researchers are calling a friendship recession, the 2021 American Perspective Survey found that the number of Americans with no close friends has quadrupled since 1990, from 3% to 12%. Free social infrastructure is not just chomping. It is a design insight.
The friendship recession data is genuinely alarming. 12% of Americans report having zero close friends. Among men, it is 15%. And this is not just loneliness in the vague, poetic sense. This has measurable physiological consequences that we will get to in a moment. But first I want to talk about the attention piece, because there is another dimension here that the bench sitters understand intuitively. These men are not multitasking. They are doing one thing, being present with each other, and that is a trained capacity. There was a study out of the University of Virginia, originally published in 2014 by Timothy Wilson and colleagues, and replicated in 2023. They put participants in a room alone for 15 minutes with nothing to do. No phone, no book, no distractions, just their thoughts. And they gave them the option to self-administer an electric shock if they got bored. 67% of men and 25% of women chose to shock themselves rather than sit quietly.
That is an incredible statistic. Two-thirds of men would rather experience physical pain than be alone with their thoughts for 15 minutes.
Yet the bench sitters do this for hours. Not in a sterile lab room, granted. But the point stands. Bench sitting is a trained capacity for boredom that we have systematically lost. We have filled every interstitial moment with scrolling, with podcasts, with notifications. The bench sitters have preserved the ability to just be.
It is like they have a muscle we have let atrophy, the stillness muscle.
There is a term for this in Italian culture, dolce far niente, the sweetness of doing nothing. It is not laziness. It is a deliberate appreciation of unstructured time. And I think that is the first thing the bench sitters can teach us. Doing nothing in the company of others is not the absence of activity. It is its own activity. It just does not produce a deliverable.
Which is probably why our culture does not know what to do with it. If it cannot be bullet-pointed in a weekly review, it does not count.
All right, so we have established the anthropology and the coordination mechanism. But the bench is not just a cultural curiosity. It turns out to be a longevity intervention. This is where the Blue Zones research gets really interesting.
For listeners who have not followed this closely, blue zones are regions of the world where people live statistically longer and healthier lives. Dan Buettner identified five of them. Sardinia in Italy, Icaria in Greece, Nicoya in Costa Rica, Okinawa in Japan, and Loma Linda in California. And the common thread across all of them is not what most people think.
The diet gets all the headlines. Everyone wants to know what the Okinawans eat, what the Sardinians drink. And yes, there are dietary patterns, mostly plant-based, moderate calories, some red wine. But Buettner's actual framework is called the Power 9, and diet is only part of it. The other factors include moving naturally, having a sense of purpose, downshifting to reduce stress, and, this is the key one, belonging to the right tribe. Having a circle of friends who support each other and reinforce healthy behaviors.
The bench is the right tribe in physical form.
And the biological mechanism here is well documented. Chronic loneliness triggers a stress response. It elevates cortisol. It increases inflammatory markers like interleukin-6 and C, reactive protein. Over decades, that low-grade inflammation contributes to cardiovascular disease, cognitive decline, and weakened immune function. What the bench provides is low-grade, consistent social contact that buffers that stress response. It is not about deep, soul-bearing conversation. It is about the presence of familiar others.
The bench is essentially a social immune system booster.
That is exactly what it is. And there is a landmark study that backs this up. The Harvard Study of Adult Development, also known as the Grant Study, has been running for 85 years now. It has tracked the lives of 724 men from adolescence into old age. And the finding that keeps emerging, according to the current director Robert Waldinger, is that relationship satisfaction at age 50 is a stronger predictor of health at age 80 than cholesterol levels.
Let that land for a moment. How happy you are in your relationships at 50 predicts your physical health at 80 better than your cholesterol numbers. That is not soft, fuzzy, self-help wisdom. That is hard longitudinal data.
Waldinger has been very clear about this in his work. It is not the number of friends. It is not whether you are in a relationship. It is the quality and warmth of your connections. You can be lonely in a marriage and you can be deeply connected while single. The bench sitters have warmth built into their daily routine.
There is a case study I want to bring in here that predates the Blue Zones by decades. The town of Roseto, Pennsylvania. This was a community of Italian immigrants, mostly from the same region of southern Italy. In the 1960s, a physician named Stuart Wolf noticed something strange. The men of Roseto had almost no heart disease. This was in an era when heart attacks were the leading cause of death for American men. And these guys were not health nuts. They smoked, they ate sausages fried in lard, they drank wine with every meal. By all conventional medical logic, they should have been dropping dead.
The Roseto Effect. Wolf and his team studied the community extensively in 1961 to 1963. They found that the protective factor was social cohesion, three generations living under one roof. Neighbors who knew each other intimately, a town where nobody was isolated. People gathered on porches, in kitchens, on the street. The community itself was the health intervention.
Here is the tragic part. Wolf went back in later decades. As Roseto assimilated into mainstream American culture, as people moved to single-family homes in the suburbs, stopped gathering on porches, stopped knowing their neighbors, the heart disease rate rose to match the national average. Same gene pool, same diet, same region. The only thing that changed was the social fabric.
That is a natural experiment that is almost impossible to replicate ethically. You could not design a study where you tell a community to stop being close to each other. But it happened organically, and the health outcomes tracked the social decline perfectly. The bench is the Roseto effect in miniature. It is a daily dose of being known.
We have the mechanism. Low stakes, unscheduled, zero-cost social contact reduces chronic stress, which reduces inflammation, which predicts longevity. The bench sitters are not just passing time. They are engaged in a daily health practice that just happens to look like doing nothing.
I want to add one more piece to this, because there is a generational dimension that matters. What do the old-timers themselves get from this arrangement? It is not just health, it is purpose. There is a concept from developmental psychology called generativity. Erik Erikson identified it as the seventh stage of psychosocial development. The need to contribute to the next generation, to leave something behind, to be a guide or a mentor or a witness.
The bench is a stage for generativity.
When you sit on that bench, you are not just a retiree killing time. You are a local historian. You are a storyteller. You are someone who remembers what this street looked like 40 years ago. You have a role. And for younger people, the bench offers access to elders without the formality of a mentorship program. You do not have to sign up. You just sit down.
There is something almost subversive about that. In a culture that has professionalized everything, we have life coaches and career mentors and wellness consultants, and these guys are just on a bench. And the intergenerational transfer happens without anyone filling out an intake form.
The Greek version of this is the caffeneo. These are traditional coffee houses, mostly in villages, where older men gather. They are not Starbucks. They are often very basic. A few tables, strong coffee, maybe some backgammon boards. The caffeneo is the social hub of the village. And it has been declining as younger generations move to cities and as coffee culture becomes more commercialized. But in the places where it persists, it serves exactly this function. It is a parliament without the name.
Let me ask the question that is probably on a lot of listeners' minds at this point. This all sounds wonderful, but it also sounds like something that requires being a retired Mediterranean man with no demands on your time, and a village square within walking distance. How does this translate to someone who is 35, working full-time, living in a city, and whose friends are scattered across three time zones?
This is the practical question, and it is a fair one. I want to offer three concrete strategies. The first is what I will call the anchor bench. Identify a physical spot near your home or work that you can visit at a semi-regular time. It could be an actual bench in a park. It could be a specific spot in a library or a community center. The rules are simple, 20 minutes minimum. You go there at roughly the same time on roughly the same days. The goal is not to meet someone immediately. The goal is to become a regular presence. People notice regulars. Eventually, someone joins you.
This is basically what Korn has been saying about libraries for years. One of the few remaining public spaces where loitering without a transaction is allowed.
And that is the principle. You are reclaiming the right to be in a place without a purchase. The second strategy is the open invitation. Tell a few friends, I will be at this cafe every Tuesday at 10 in the morning. No RSVP needed. Come if you are free, do not come if you are not. There is no obligation. The key is that you are going anyway. You are not waiting for confirmation. You are not checking who is available. You are just there. If someone shows up, great. If not, you have 20 minutes of quiet with your coffee.
This is the part that requires unlearning. We are so conditioned to need a headcount. If I invite 6 people and only 2 can make it, I feel like the event failed. The open invitation reframes it. 2 is not a failure. 0 is not a failure. The event is just you being in a place, and anyone who shows up is a bonus.
That brings us to the third strategy, which is the hardest one for most people. The zero agenda hang. Invite someone to do nothing with you. Do not propose a walk, a meal, a movie, a board game. Just say, do you want to come sit on this bench with me for a while? The discomfort of making that invitation reveals how deeply conditioned we are to need a frame. We feel like we need a reason to be together. The bench teaches us that the companionship is the reason.
I think if I texted a friend and said, hey, want to come sit on a bench and watch traffic? They would assume I was having some kind of crisis.
That is exactly the point. The fact that that invitation sounds like a cry for help is evidence of how far we have drifted from this as a normal social mode. The bench sitters do not pathologize stillness.
All right, so those are the individual strategies. But I want to zoom out for a moment and ask about the structural piece, because individual behavior change only goes so far. If your neighborhood has no benches, if your public spaces are designed to move people through rather than invite them to stay, if every square foot of commercial real estate requires a transaction, then bench sitting is not a choice you can make.
This is the urban design dimension, and it is a real constraint. A lot of modern public spaces are what urbanists call hostile architecture. Benches with armrests in the middle, specifically designed to prevent people from lying down. Ledges with spikes, parks that close at dusk. The built environment communicates that lingering is not welcome. Compare that to a Mediterranean village square where the benches face inward, the shade is intentional, and the whole space says, stay a while.
Hostile architecture is the physical manifestation of a culture that does not trust unstructured time. And it is not just benches. It is the disappearance of front porches in American home design. It is the zoning laws that prevent mixed-use neighborhoods where people might actually walk to a central gathering spot. We have designed the bench out of our lives and then wonder why we are lonely.
There is an interesting counterexample from Japan. The Okinawan Moai, spelled M-O-A-I-I, is a small group of lifelong friends who support each other socially, emotionally, and sometimes financially. Children are placed into moais at a young age, and they stay in them for life. It is the bench-sitting equivalent, but formalized into a lifelong commitment. And Okinawa is a blue zone, so the principle translates across cultures and climates. It is not about the Mediterranean weather. It is about the social structure.
The Moai is basically bench-sitting with a membership card.
That formalization solves a problem that the informal bench tradition does not. The bench depends on a village where everyone knows everyone. If you move to a new city where you know nobody, there is no bench to join. The Moai assigns you a social group from childhood. It is opt-out rather than opt-in.
Which is a much stronger default. Our default is isolation. You have to actively build a social life from scratch every time you move, which for many professionals is every few years. The bench sitters never had to do that because their social infrastructure was in the physical layout of their town.
Let me bring this back to something actionable. If the structural piece is beyond our individual control, and if most of us do not live in walkable Mediterranean villages, what is the actual practical thing someone listening can do tomorrow?
I think the answer has three layers. First, design for low-friction social infrastructure in your own life. Identify one place you pass regularly that could become your bench. Commit to sitting there for 15 minutes twice a week with no phone. Do not try to recruit anyone. Just become a regular. The bench sitters did not build the bench. They just showed up.
Second, kill the pretext requirement. The next time you want to see a friend, do not invent an activity to justify the meeting. Do not propose dinner or a movie or a hike. Just say, "I want to see you. Let us find a bench." The discomfort you feel saying that is the thing you need to practice.
Third, reclaim wasted time as social infrastructure. The 10 minutes you spend waiting for a friend to arrive, the 5 minutes before a meeting starts, the time spent in line. These are not gaps to fill with phone scrolling. They are opportunities for low-stakes connection with whoever is nearby. The bench sitters know that companionship is found in the margins. They do not schedule it. They inhabit it.
I want to add a caveat here because I think it is important not to romanticize this too much. These traditions can be exclusionary. The bench in many Mediterranean cultures is heavily male-dominated. The kafaneo in Greece is traditionally a male space. Women have their own social rituals, gathering in homes, at markets, at church, but the public bench as a symbol is often gendered. And the parliament in Israel can be politically toxic. It is not always a warm, fuzzy exchange of wisdom. Sometimes it is a bunch of angry old men yelling about Netanyahu.
That is an important point. The bench is not inherently virtuous. It is a container. What goes into the container depends on the people. But the container itself, the low-friction, unscheduled, zero-cost social infrastructure, is what we have lost. And we can fill it with better things than yelling about politics.
There is also a privilege dimension that we should acknowledge. Bench sitting requires free time, a safe neighborhood, and a climate where sitting outside is pleasant for at least part of the year. Not everyone has those things. But the principle is adaptable. A community center in a cold climate, a stoop in a dense city, a break room at a workplace. The form changes, but the function is the same. Low stakes, unscheduled, zero-cost social contact.
The stoop is a great example. In a lot of American cities, the stoop was the bench. It was where you sat in the evening, watched the street, talked to neighbors. Air conditioning and television killed the stoop. People went inside, and then they wondered why they did not know their neighbors anymore.
The stoop, the porch, the bench, the cafeneo, the parliament. These are all versions of the same thing. They are social infrastructure that does not require a transaction, an invitation, or an agenda, and they are in decline everywhere. The question is whether we can rebuild them, or whether we have to invent new forms that serve the same function.
If the bench is this powerful, how do we build one into a life that currently runs on calendars and notifications? I think we have outlined the individual strategies, but I want to end on a slightly broader question. What happens to a society that loses its benches entirely?
That is the big, unsettling question. We are already seeing some of the consequences. The friendship recession, the rise in loneliness, related health problems, the fragmentation of communities. When the only places to gather require a purchase, the poor are excluded. When the only ways to coordinate require technology, the elderly are excluded. When the only acceptable social mode is scheduled, optimized, and productive, the soul is excluded.
The bench sitter from the opening of this episode is still there. He will be there tomorrow. That reliability, not the content of any particular conversation, is the gift. The bench is a promise of presence. It says, I'm here, I will be here, and you know where to find me. In a world of cancellations and reschedules and maybe next week's, that is a radical thing.
There is a line from the Harvard study that has stuck with me. Waldinger said that the clearest message from 85 years of research is this. Good relationships keep us happier and healthier. Not wealth, not fame, not achievement. And the bench is simply a technology for relationships. An old, low-tech, deeply effective technology.
The bench is the original social network. No algorithm, no engagement metrics, no venture capital. Just wood and time and the willingness to be present.
I think that is where we should leave this. The prompt asked what we can learn from these old-timers. The answer is that they have preserved something we have optimized away, the ability to be together without a reason. To let companionship be the point. To build a life where showing up is enough.
If you want to try this yourself, start small. Find your bench. Sit on it. Leave your phone in your pocket. See what happens. It will probably feel uncomfortable at first. That discomfort is the sound of a muscle you have not used in a long time waking up.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1930s, an amateur archaeologist in Equatorial Guinea claimed to have discovered Aztec Patoli scoring pebbles in a cave near Bata, suggesting pre-Columbian transatlantic contact. The claim was debunked decades later when the pebbles were identified as naturally eroded laterite nodules, but for about 6 months in 1934, it nearly made it into a National Geographic feature before a fact-checker killed it.
A near-miss National Geographic feature about pebbles that turned out to be regular rocks. That is the most Hilbert fun fact we have ever had.
The fact-checker who saved National Geographic from the laterite nodules deserves a plaque somewhere. Thank you, Hilbert.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumintop. If you have a prompt you want us to discuss, send it in at myweirdprompts.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show.
Until next time, find your bench.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.